Welcome back to the Grow Your B2B SaaS podcast. In this podcast, I interview industry experts on every topic related to growing a B2B SaaS. This is the second summary episode you're listening to, focused on how to grow from 10K MRR to 10 million ARR. So if you're on that journey right now, make sure to listen to this one, because we basically asked the 20 guests in the entire season what kind of advice would they give a founder who's on their way growing to 10 million ARR, and we combined all their answers in this single episode. If you haven't reached a 10K MRR yet, listen to the previous podcast, because we'll basically cover that topic. My request, if you like this content, please give us a thumbs up, subscribe, a follow, a review, so we can help other founders like yourself. For now, let's just dive right in. In episode one, I interviewed Wes Busch regarding product-led growth.
So when you're trying to go from that, it depends obviously how big your team is, but when you're trying to make that big of a jump, there's a lot more alignments that you need to do. And so one of the reasons why, like in our product-led go-to-market training, when we teach it and implement it in businesses, it's like, it's actually a weekly kind of coaching call with the entire leadership team, because when we go through these same components in the product-led go-to-market motion, what's really cool is that when you create that buy-in and alignments at each stage, they implement it because it's their idea. There's less resistance. Whereas if it's like, no, here's how we're going to scale to 10 mil and this is the product-led motion and this fancy consultant comes in and shares it all, it almost never gets implemented. So it has to come from the people, and then you have to build being product-led as a capability in the rest of the company. And so if you go through that product-led go-to-market system a few times, you will definitely build that long-term capability.
In episode two, I interviewed Asia Rangio on how to audit your SaaS growth.
So I'm actually going to break it out into, so let's go from 10K to 80K MRR, which would get you to the million-ish. I think it's 83 or whatever. But so from 10K to 83K MRR, getting to the million, the biggest differences here are doubling down on the channels that generate the best paying customer, getting like violently aggressively clear about who the best paying customer actually is and what the context is upon which they are buying the software. Too many teams get way too distracted on the way to a million. They get super distracted. They think they have to be everything to everyone. They think that they have to like scale and grow many different parts of the product, and they don't necessarily have to. They actually need to instead focus on best paying customer, creating value, delivering value. That's the trifecta. That's what gets you to a million. That plus channels. We need to have a way to generate the best paying customer. And ideally, it's with a channel that is cost effective. As we've discussed, it's getting more and more expensive. This all, like, your pricing and monetization is part of the story as well. But once we get to a million plus, so a million to five is very different, in my opinion, than five to 10. One to five is usually, oh shit, we're figuring it out. And their teams are figuring out processes for the first time. Teams are also figuring out like, oh, how do we actually all work together to accomplish the mutual goal? Usually also, this is when they discover that they're actually not as good at product management as they think that they are. And so they start hiring their very first head of product, or they start hiring, if they already have a VP of product, maybe they're already investing in like, what is our methodology for how we define what customer value looks like and how we understand the problem space that we're in and how we build new features? What are the trade-offs that we're making? And this is also usually like 1 to 5 million ARR is usually also when teams discover What is their go-to-market strategy now? Because it's probably different from when they were at 20K in MRR. And usually 1 to 5, it's fun and uncomfortable at the same time, because you're making trade-offs go-to-market-wise. What you build with the product makes trade-offs actively in the market. And I think a lot of teams, they might know that subconsciously, but when it plays out in real life, it's like a surprise. And then 5 to 10, usually, so from my experience, 5 to 10 is, I feel like once you get to 5, getting to 10 is usually pretty clear. Because you've done all the struggling from 1 to 5. Like, you're probably pretty crystal clear on go-to-market strategy to an extent. Like, you're clear, here's how we're positioned, here's what we're ultimately, like, here's what we're providing to the market. Here are maybe not just one best-paying customer, but here's our top 2 to 3 segments. Here's how we go to market to each of those segments. And really 5 to 10 ends up being more about team and people and culture, I find, and making sure you've got the right people in the right seats to do the good work. And then 10 beyond. So I can give the picture of 10 to 50, for example, because I've seen this too. This is where go-to-market strategy now changes. And now we're making decisions and trade-offs about our position in the market. And this is where product development, product management, this actually becomes crucial. And also too, we start to see companies make acquisitions. We start to see companies really building their brand. I think about HubSpot, actually, thinking about like, how does HubSpot do what HubSpot does? When they were in that 10 to 50 space, they were making very specific investments in certain parts of the market to acquire like their market share. And then of course they're huge now, but yeah, it's a different race, but that's the advice I would give.
In episode 3, I interviewed Aymeric Arnold on his lessons learned bootstrapping B2B SaaS to 20 million ARR in revenue.
Find what makes you unique. Find something that allows you to tell a story that makes you unique. Think about this. If you are like many other solutions and you get on because you've worked your ass off to get to 10K, so you've created some lead generation and you got a lead coming in and they come to your demo and they ask you, oh, I'm comparing you with X. Let's say X is your well-funded biggest competitor. I'm comparing you with X. What makes you different? If you don't have a compelling story at that point to tell, you're probably going to lose the deal. Because at the end of the day, they want to be able to go with the biggest, the safest, the ones that everybody recognizes as the market leader. It's much safer to choose X, the market leader, than you, the small bootstrap company that's struggling to create your place in the sun. So I would say, oh yeah, we're kind of like X, which is going to make X win at the end of the day, if that's all you have to say. But if you say, I'm like X, but I'm cheaper, that's not enough. Or the kind of customers you're going to have are not going to get the best customers, ideally. You can start there. I'm cheaper. It's a first level of differentiation. We're much more affordable. Why not? But be aware that you shouldn't keep that as the differentiating. If you want to go to 10 million, right? That's the question here, not 10K, 10M. If you want to go to 10 million, you have to be more than just pricing. It has to be something unique that makes your story more appealing than than X's story. One unique thing that you have or you offer and nobody else does, I think that's really important if you want to go to 10 million, because otherwise you're not going to go to 10 million. The third thing I would say, I'm just thinking out loud, is you have a go-to-market that you master and you're really good at. And go-to-market means you've defined a niche you're going after or a market segment. For example, if everybody in your industry does mid-market and enterprise, but nobody does SMB, maybe SMB is your way to grow to 10 million, right? If everybody does SMB, but nobody does mid-market really well, then maybe mid-market is your way to go to 10 million. Enterprise, I don't think so, because it's so hard and takes so much cash that I don't think a bootstrap company can easily go to price, but it is to me that's what it would take. So there is a segment that you can seize, and you have a go-to-market. You're really good at SEO, or you're really good at Google Ads, or so you have something in that range that makes you above the crowd, that makes you really better than the other alternatives out there. That's going to take you to 10 million. And then obviously, if you want to go to 50 million, then it's a whole other story. But you can't be like everybody else with no really, real different and no real way to get to the market in a way that you're really good at. If that's where you are, you're not going to get to 10 million.
In episode 4, I interviewed Kevin Dorsey on how to improve your SaaS sales.
So now you got to 10K. So you should have some ideas of what good looks like. Who's buying? Why are they buying? What does that look like? Now I can define what good looks like and then define it, document, demonstrate it, deliberately practice. It has to be documented step by step. You got to get it out of your head, founders. Back to the 10K MRR, all those calls should be recorded. Every single demo should be recorded. Every single customer should be getting that customer interview afterwards. And like, you build that foundation of content. You got to get it out of your head, because you can't do it on your own, and expecting a new rep to come in and get it the way that you do is not fair. So you have to really consolidate all that information to go through it. And then it's that repetition. Define, document, demonstrate, deliberately practice. Cool, we got that. Now we move to the next one. And now you can scale, right? Because really the only difference between going from 10K to 10 million is how many other people have to do it. Like, how many other people have to do it? You can get to 10K on your own. In fact, you should get to 10K on your own. Like, you personally, I believe a lot of companies should be able to get to a million on their own, like with small core team with founders doing things into the market, right? Like, now when you're trying to go from 1 to 10, now I need 10 people to do what I did. I need that repeatability, that documentation, that deliberate practice of those things.
In episode 5, I interviewed Sean Ellis on how to implement the growth hacking mindset in your B2B SaaS.
At that point, I like to spend a lot of time understanding what's working, monitoring where are all users coming from? So if one of those channels drops off, I can find out why. Sometimes it could be as simple as like just a broken link that happened or a budget ran out somewhere. And then which customers are we able to retain best? Making sure that we're going out and targeting more of those types of customers, but really learning from the data of your success and just doubling down on the things that are working. And then, yeah, building out more of a full experience growth team that is constantly looking for that next great opportunity to drive improvement. And so sometimes it may seem like you have a great opportunity to drive improvement. You spend a full month, say, working on improving your frequency of usage or your engagement loop, and you're not able to make any progress. Maybe you were more optimized there than you thought you were. And so that's okay. Then you focus on a different area. That's why I don't like to do real long-term, a six-month campaign on one area, because if you're wrong, then you end up burning a lot of resources. So I'll do max 45-day kind of focus area. And then after that 45 days, I may say, oh, let's do another 45 days or another 30 days if we made a lot of progress, but it's just easier to switch off to something else if the opportunity wasn't as good as you thought it might be.
In episode 6, I interviewed Dirk Sommer on how to prepare your SaaS for an exit.
So a lot of acquisitions we do are rather like products, not companies, because you cannot speak of like a big organization and everything is like clean processes, etc. Everyone knows what he or she is doing. So it's more like a product with some people around it. And I'm not saying this in a negative way. It's just fine. They are great, great companies still. But I think if you want to be at like 5 million ARR and beyond, I think you have to build a company, because otherwise I've rarely seen that these small bootstrapped companies are getting beyond 5 million, because the founders don't want to manage a large team and build a second line of management, and they want to be involved and stuff. So I think one thing is you have to build a business and an organization around the product. This is one thing. And the second thing is you have to make yourself more obsolete from day-to-day operations, because then you're the shepherd, you are the visionary, and you are like driving the direction of the business, but you shouldn't be involved in like coding the product or other operational tasks. So I think this is pretty important, and it also prepares like your exit, because if buyers are buying like a 20 million ARR company, they don't want to have it heavily depending on you as a founder.
In episode 7, I interviewed Walter Rehberger on how to price your B2B SaaS to accelerate growth.
So still, segmentation is important. Reviewing and reiterating your pricing is still going to be equally important. It doesn't need to be like 3 times a year, probably. Maybe once a year is enough. Now it becomes a bit more on maturity, I would say, of your pricing model. You cannot have really the cowboy mentality anymore. Oh, we'll see it when we speak to a customer if it's still perfect. You need to have something structured. So now it becomes more strategic. How do we talk about our pricing and in terms of conditions? How can we upsell midterm if we feel like it? How do we deal with indexation? It's boring, but it's part of it and can grow your revenue. So it becomes more of how is our discount policy? What is our mandate for C levels? What is our mandate for mid-level, senior levels, etc., and AEs themselves? So it becomes a bit more on building maturity around it and the strategic decisions. Should we have it on our website? Should we have all of it on our website, or should we just have the base plans and then starting from 500 euros on our website? Those kind of discussions is what you should focus on at that stage, because I hope you have at least your pricing in a place where it's not going to require drastic changes every year. It just needs optimization.
In episode 8, I interviewed Simon Hoiberg on how to get your first 1,000 users for your B2B SaaS.
Generally speaking, when you're going towards these bigger numbers, I think one advice that I would give is, as a founder, keep putting yourself out there. I have met founders who are going beyond $1,000 per month, and they start having this idea that now they can lean back as the CEO. They can just be at strategy level. They don't have to be like involved in the business anymore. And this is just not going to work. It might work when you get up to some really high numbers and your organization grows really big, but you as a founder, keep putting yourself out there. And it might be uncomfortable for you to go on YouTube and sit on a video like this or join a podcast episode like we're doing right here. And it might feel like you're crossing a boundary if you have to go up and do public speaking and standing in front of a bunch of people and talk. But don't fool yourself into thinking that just because your SaaS products is starting to make money, that you as the founder don't have to show up anymore. You absolutely do. So that would be the best advice I can give at this stage.
In episode 9, I interviewed Maya Voye on how to achieve product market fit for your B2B SaaS.
It's all about creating leverage, being focused on high leverage opportunities and building processes so that you can outsource the groundwork to other team members or partners or whoever you are working with, but that you still protect some time to do the strategy work, right? Because the least that you want to be in this stage is an overpaid product managers. And I see a lot of brand managers, for example, just like having 14 meetings a day, just like being wrap up on all the corners, doing these final sign-ups. And I literally think that people should protect their time and build processes in order to make this work meaningful and sustainable. If the problem, the main problem in the first page is mindset, the main problem, underlying problem in the second one are processes.
In episode 10, I interviewed Guillaume Mobetti on how to implement a profit-led approach for your SaaS.
I think it's something like a mistake I did, but it's really hiring the right people. And the reason it's tough is because like when you don't have like experience in hiring, you're going to make mistakes. And I guess even when you have experience, you're going to make mistakes. But for me, people are everything. If you can't build a dream team, you will not be able to reach like 10 million in ARR. So what I would advise is first have really well identified flywheel. And that can be pretty much anything. Like there are no like magic playbook, but I mentioned one in the beginning of the podcast. And the second thing is spend time, a lot of your time, hiring and finding talents.
This podcast episode is sponsored by Redditus. Redditus helps B2B SaaS companies to set up, manage and grow an affiliate program. In short, it means you're asking other people, affiliates, to promote your SaaS. You would only pay the affiliates a kickback fee when they deliver you paid clients, making it a very cost-effective and scalable way to grow your MRR. See more at getreditus.com. In episode 11, I interviewed Stefan Avicjon on how to achieve explosive growth and increase profitability.
You need to continue talking to and understanding your market, your customers, because the value of your product changes over time. The perception of your product, well, the capabilities, the value that you bring into to your customers' life, it changes over time as well.
Yeah.
Keep on speaking to customers because that is the real driver for any company. It's fun because one of my companies, we're conducting something called a reality check. And I'm in the midst of selling it. So now I know all the numbers. We've conducted 77 reality checks. And we've done reality checks for the small startup without almost any customers up until Cargill, which is one of the largest companies in the world. What I've learned with these 77 reports is that only 1 in 20 leaders, it doesn't matter how big your company is, it doesn't matter how old it is, it doesn't matter how young you are, only 1 in 20 founders know why the customers buy from them. And I find that really weird because in reality, the only reason you have a company you're on is because you have customers. It's the only purpose the company has, that is to serve their customers. Yep. So if you don't understand what your customers want, how the fuck are you going to lead your company towards success?
In episode 12, I interviewed Chris Walker on how to unify sales, marketing, and SDRs in your go-to-market strategy.
As you start to get into the 10 to 20 million ARR range, at the low end 50, at the high end 200 employees, that a lot of processes start to break. A lot of internal communication methods start to break. That you have a lot of different people running and misalignment between departments and teams starts to become very apparent, especially in go-to-market. And oftentimes that a business that gets there, especially if you're getting there fast, will quote unquote hit a ceiling where something fundamentally needs to change in the business, which isn't always about go-to-market. It could be sales and marketing, but it could be product, it could be operations, it could be culture. There's something that needs to change in the business to unlock that next potential growth trajectory. And so that's more of a, that's business advice overall. It's not go-to-market's the only thing that breaks as your company scales. And being able to try and identify, and it, sometimes it can take a long time to tease out. It can take years to really tease out what is the thing that's holding us back, or what are the assumptions that we had about how our business will grow or about what our customers do that are no longer serving us, and being able to clearly identify that, be able to make a change, and then boom, almost overnight, you're able to unlock that next phase. When it comes to go-to-market specifically, I think it's just an undeniable obsession with what do my target customers want? What do my target customers do every day? And a parallel obsession with how do we deliver a profitable, sustainable, successful go-to-market motion where our business continue to grow and scale in this new world where it's not growth at all costs and we're not going to burn hundreds of millions of dollars to maybe get, you know, 10, 20, 30 million ARR. I think those are the two things, obsession with customers and then an obsession and a commitment to building your company in a different way than what historically people did. And a lot of people that have built a company by raising a lot of money got to 100 million ARR. Sure, the founders took secondary, but every other person on the cap table that thought they were going to make $1 million, now their shares are worth $0. Because valuations are down, the company's not growing anymore, they have to fire sale. It's clear that it's emerging, that there'll be a different way to build technology and SaaS companies. It doesn't involve such a heavy hyper growth, raise money and burn that money. I think we'll have a more thoughtful conversation about growth moving forward.
In episode 13, I interviewed Chris Orlop on how to turn discovery calls into customers.
I would think they need to standardize their sales process. So 10K MRR, you don't need a standardized sales process. You don't even have product market fit at that point, right? Or maybe you just have an inkling of product market fit. As you start to scale, once you hit, say, $3 million in ARR, now you're starting to scale, you need to have a predictable, repeatable sales process that a 25-year-old kid can follow. So here's how we do our first call. Here's how we set it up. Here are the questions we ask. Here's what we're trying to do. Here's what our second call looks like. Here's what our third call looks like. You can color outside the lines a little bit, but here's your compass. This is your roadmap for closing deals. And then putting a sales management team in place so that they can, I don't want to say quality check, but for lack of a better word, quality check the sales team to make sure they're following a process. And if the sales team isn't following the process, understanding why. Do they think the process sucks? That's a problem. Maybe you need to change the process. But it's really hard to scale to, if you sell B2B, to 10 million, 20 million and beyond, if you don't have some standardized stages of your sales cycle and exit criteria you're trying to knock off during each one of those stages.
In episode 14, I interviewed Cameron Hay on how do investors analyze SaaS businesses.
My advice would be make sure you've got your numbers in order, because investors are going to go through your data points in a huge amount of detail. And you really want to be making sure that you are making those data-driven decisions to help you grow and make sure that you're ready for these conversations. And coming back to the point we made earlier, where actually you're getting the most out of your investors, and they are industry experts, they are very knowledgeable, and they see so many different businesses, that if you've got all this data and it's cleanly presented, they're able to actually help you grow and be able to help you understand what else is going on in the market.
In episode 15, I interviewed Matt Wolach on how to scale your SaaS to 1 million MRR using processes.
Let's say you're going to that from that 10K to 10 million. You've got to have all sorts of process in place. You need marketing processes. You need your sales processes. You need your team processes. It can't happen without that. And I can't tell you how many clients I take on in the 3 to 4 million range, and they're just all over the place, very scattered. And they don't have process for this. They don't have process for that. And they admit it. They realize it. And that's what happens when you grow quickly. Oh, we just through brute force and effort just made it happen. But in order to really get to that 10, you have to have the process and the structure laid out so you know exactly what's going on here. So anybody you hire knows exactly what's going on at each phase, and it makes it simple to plug people in and they can take off and they can be excellent at what they're doing. Process is king getting to 10 million.
In episode 16, I interviewed Cristobal Alonso on the unsexy truth about startup success.
One of the biggest surprises when people ask me in this business, what is my biggest surprise? It's always been that whatever I was working doesn't work anymore. So when you go to pre-series A, the way you have grown doesn't mean that's the way you want to grow. Right? So I think the biggest piece of advice to CEO is do not think this is a cookie cutter recipe, right? So really measure everything you are doing, because most likely the way you're going to grow to the next stage, to 10 million, then to the 100 million, is going to be very different to the way you grow until now. And the only way to do that is to measure. And I think you, when you are at that level, you have enough metrics and numbers and you need to measure it. I think we're very intuitive on the first stages, and it makes sense because there is not that much data, even if you still have opportunities. I think we need to go into measuring much more, having that data to make decisions. And then I would say two things at the same time is, one is keep listening to the customers, find ways to keep listening to customers. You think you have 10 million, you're big. The corporate is making 150, 200 million, right? So your difference is, can you keep talking to the customer and be more agile as they are, right? And to me, is that don't start being afraid of making mistakes, because now the mistakes have become more expensive. But you cannot be afraid to make mistakes, right? And keep maintaining the culture of the company as much as you can. It's going to be very difficult. 50, 100, 200 people, 300 people, there's a different type of animals. But I think if you make those places still special to work at. So you have to grow, that's your focus, but keep building a great company, no matter what. And I think that is still is going to make a difference, because best talent is, at the end of the day, is still the best recipe to keep growing.
In episode 17, I interviewed Dustin House on how to set up affiliate marketing for your B2B SaaS.
That next level in this affiliate marketplace is the highest potential you're going to have are those long ranking SEO articles. So being that your brand has got some leverage now and has grown to a certain recognizable factor, now you can get those bigger players that you might not have been able to get a hold of in the early phases of your company. So leveraging the fact that other affiliates are having success with your program is a really good step here. And making some case studies that can go along with your outreach campaigns of like when you get somebody, when you get a bite, that you can share that kind of success story with some of your other partners. Really good fit for getting them to that next level. But the real secret in all of this is what's ranking on Google today? And are there any affiliates in that first SERP for the keywords that you want to rank for? And can we get on those pages that already exist there? Because those are going to be huge difference makers in your affiliate program if you can get onto those sites. What is it going to take to get on those sites? Because they know the value of their publications, of their listicles, and getting on those lists themselves. It might be a very hard task, but absolutely worth it if you have the tenacity and the wherewithal to talk your way onto those lists.
In episode 18, I interviewed Alina Vandenberg on how Chili Piper is becoming a billion-dollar company.
I think when we had to make the bridge between 3 million to 10 million, that inflection point, we had to get a lot more mature when on our go-to-market motions. Our events motion was pretty mature. Our social media was pretty mature. Our partnership function was also pretty mature. We still had to learn to put our eggs in other baskets as well, because you can't really build a business just one channel, because that channel can always start breaking. Yes, you can have a podcast, and yes, you can have events, and your founder might be very strong at LinkedIn, or you might have really good at cold emailing or cold calls, but betting on one channel is really risky. To have that inflection, we started understanding how we can diversify and go to market motions and how to do that wisely, because you can't get really good at many things, but you can get good at a few things that you can count on one hand. So you have to be really good at understanding which motions work in your specific niche with your buyers and see where they are and see how we can diversify your portfolio there.
In episode 19, I interviewed Adam Robinson on how to build a billion-dollar business in a year.
If you can hold off, it's going to be so tempting. You're going to start getting 10 emails a day from institutional investors. If you're still a bootstrapper at 10 million, there are so many different types of people that want to give you money. I would say don't take it. I think there is a beautiful point that I'm very close to reaching. Maybe some would argue I've reached it, where you are making a lot of money every year. If you're lucky enough to take chips off the table in this round that you do, I think that's the motivating factor for most people to do it. From what I understand, they don't provide that much value. I think at best they can be not a part of your world, and at worst they can ruin your life. It's like this pitch of, oh, we're going to give you go-to-market advice or whatever. You don't need it. Nobody, they're not really going to help you hire that much. So I would say, man, if you can just kick that bootstrapping thing down the road a few more years, you could get to this dream world where there's a lot of revenue, the business is substantially de-risked, like you're paying yourself a lot every year. And if you hit 10, you're on your way. At the end of the day, the potential business growth of a SaaS is related to churn rate. I don't know what the numbers are, but you gotta have pretty high churn to stop out at 10. If you don't, definitely don't raise money. Yeah. And if you do, you're probably not going to be able to raise money anyway.
In episode 20, I interviewed Jim Yu on how to sell enterprise SaaS.
Once you're trying to move to 10 million, once you have your first million, you really want to then take that pattern and solve for the problem of how do you make it repeatable, right? Scale to 10 million is all about how repeatable it is. So you need to then be able to take the target market sales pitch, the value proposition, the sales pitch, the onboarding, the implementation, and turn it into a methodology and have it be something that can be easily taught to people. This is the critical thing in enterprise, is the ramp for all those functions is very important. You have to be able to take a person of a certain experience set, teach them the formula that you've built, and then have them be able to learn it. Typically within 3 months, you're gonna hire them, they're gonna go onboarding, and they're gonna get trained. And it's gonna take them about 3 months before they get to the kind of sea legs underneath them and they start to become productive. And so each one of these pieces to the 10 million push is all about making it repeatable, and where you can turn it into something that is a formula, that is a series of playbooks that you can teach to each of these team members that you're gonna bring on into these functions, and you're gonna specialize those functions, right? So you can take the formula that you build, specialize it, and then make it repeatable for all the different types of people that you're gonna bring in across that specialized sort of set of teams.
And that's the end of the summary episode, which are my personal favorites. I hope you enjoyed listening to this, because you get so much value in such a short amount of time. If you enjoyed any of the episodes, make sure you actually go ahead and listen to the full one. For now, could you do me a 5-second favor? Could you either review the podcast, give it a follow, hit subscribe, anything which is possible on a platform you're listening right now? It would help us to spread the word and help more founders like yourself. For now, I hope you enjoyed it and have a great day.